Chapter 23. Chadan. I sit back on my heels, shaking as they drag Mika away. Pain, exhaustion, and anguish all work together to push me over, and soon they will have their victory. Never stop fighting. I don't know if I have the strength, the courage, to do as Mika asks. There is a difference between choosing the right moment to be stubborn and committing to a life without fear. But still I strain, refusing to collapse in front of the court. Relief floods me as Eleveran adjourns, but no one rushes to leave. Charvis ascends to the throne, leaning in to confer with the Demagi. On both sides of the aisle, clerical councils put their heads together. I remember similar informal sessions in Mother's Court, councillors taking the time together to confer on the news of the day and prepare strategies. Today there is much to discuss. Irovan was sent to capture a princess and has returned with a prince, no doubt casting all their plans and schemes into disarray. But for every minute they linger, a part of me dies. Soon there will be nothing left, and I fear I will die here on my knees. That was very stupid, brother. Irovan drops to squat beside me, whispering, Eleveran might have killed you. I shake my head, surprised at how light it feels with my hair cut away. The sensation of sweat cooling off the top of my head is strange and unpleasant. No. I choke on a throat gone sticky and rough. Irovan brings the water bottle to my lips, and this time I am not too proud to drink. I pull so hard I cough the first swallow back up. After that, I drink more slowly, until the passage reopens and something of my voice returns. No, I say again. You might have killed me. You, Irovan, Asu, Arman, Arm Jardir, Arm Majar, would have beaten your own brother to death for your Demagi's favor. Do not presume to know me, brother. Irovan's whisper turns harsh. You have no idea what we face. I serve the Maja, not my own ambition. I force a laugh I don't feel, the snort of derision I've seen Grandmum wield like a lash. Keep telling yourself that tampweed tale. A vein pulses on Irovan's jaw, and I think he might strike me. I hope he does. I'm in such pain I will hardly feel it, but the loss of control will weaken him in the eyes of the tribe's elders. Irovan understands that too. His breathing becomes slow and even, and the vein disappears. Hanu Pash will be good for you, brother. The Sharaj will beat the insolent tongue from you better than I ever could. Now get up. He slides an arm under mine and attempts to haul me to my feet. My legs feel like ice that has just begun to form. I fear they will shatter if I put my full weight on them. I am disgusted with myself as I cling to Irovan's steady arm, desperately needing his support. I can't walk. I grimace at the whimper in my voice. You have to, Irovan says. When you were my sister, I could carry you. Now you are my brother, and in Krasia, warriors walk before the Skull Throne. I'm not a warrior, I say. Irovan looks at me as if I am a fool. It is preferable to the alternative, I assure you. I glance around. Everyone, from the Dharma and Dharmating of the council to the servants and guards, casts glances my way as they go about their business, watching while pretending not to watch. I don't know a lot about Maja customs, but I understand palace gossip. All of them are hungry for tales of the Pushting prince to bring back to their personal fiefdoms. So I grit my teeth and stumble along, step by agonizing step, until we reach Belina, waiting by an exit door on the Dharmating side of the altar. I stumble through into a private corridor, and as the door shuts behind us, Ira then sweeps me up into his arms.
You bore that well, brother.
The compliment should sicken me, but I'm too relieved to be off my feet. I melt, feeling consciousness slipping away. Take him to the chambers of healing, Belina says. That wakes me. Sharrick Hora is famed for its warrior bones, its mammoth size and architecture, its vast libraries of ancient texts dating as far back as the First Demon War 3,000 years ago. But no place was spoken of in Gatherer's University with as much awe and wonder as the Dharmating Chambers of Healing. Our Krasian instructors would invoke the legendary place like it was the final authority in medicine. Even in my haze, I cannot help but take in what I can. This part of the temple is not covered in bones. The magnificent halls, warded with intricate mosaics, brightly woven carpets, rich tapestries, and paintings so vivid it feels they might come to life. Sharumting guards are posted in the halls, and everything smells of dried herbs and old books. It reminds me of Mother's office, and that frightens me most of all. I am taken into a private chamber with a table for medical procedures and an array of bottles, jars, and surgical implements. Ira then lays me face down on the table as Belina begins filling a mortar with various herbs and oils. It is forbidden to cast healing spells on wounds from the Alakai tail, Belina says, grinding the mix into paste with a stone pestle. Remember that, next time you choose to speak out of turn and make demands of the Dimaji. She strips away my shredded shirt, methodically cleaning and inspecting my lacerated back. There is a needle and thread on her tray, but the wounds are too shallow to stitch. Instead, she spreads the paste over my back. It is pungent and stings at first, but the feeling soon fades into comfortable numbness as the herbs do their work. Rest now while you can, Belina says. The Dimaji wants you in Sharaj before the day is out.
I will take him myself, Iravan says.
Best bark quickly when Master says speak, I say.
Tst! Belina slaps me across the back, and I gasp in pain.
Silly, stupid boy. You understand nothing of what your brother has sacrificed to regain what was taken from him.
He has sacrificed me, I reply.
What else is there to understand? To replace what was taken from him, he has robbed its measure from me. I turn to stare at Iravan.
You owe me a blood debt, brother. One day, I will collect, if our father doesn't call it due first.
When he learns of your mother's deception, his anger will be for her, not us, Belina says.
He already knows. I think the words rather than speak them, for they come too close to my secret.
You know him better than I say instead. What will he do if he learns I am prisoner to the tribe who deserted Sharrick Kaa in humanity's hour of need? Belina looks at me with sad eyes. His first wish will be to send an army to crush us, even if thousands die on both sides of Desert Spear's walls. That is what a blood debt means, little Greenland prince. Are you prepared for it to be paid in innocent blood? I look away, unable to meet her gaze any longer. Belina is right. I don't understand. Not truly. And I am so tired. Then why tempt it?
Because we have nothing to lose, Belina says. The storms continue to build. They will consume us as surely if we do nothing.
I'm on my feet just a few hours later, but already I feel stronger. I heal faster than other folk, especially when I sleep. The wounds on my back have already closed, but it is a tentative thing. Even a gentle stretch in the wrong direction could reopen them. Irithen is talking about something as he leads me through the training grounds. I'm barely listening. He never shuts up.
Once there were 12 great pavilions, Irithen says, a Shiraj for every tribe in Krasia.
The yard is massive, enough for every man, woman, and child in the city to march and practice formations, but much of it is dusty and unused. Instead of 12 pavilions, I see 4, each surrounded by a cluster of low clay buildings.
Now the Shiraji are divided by blood,
Irithen continues.
Full blood for the sons of pure-blooded Marja warrior families. Half blood for the sons of Dal Sharum and Chin women. Coward's blood for the sons of Kafit. And green blood for the sons of Chin fathers.
The sky is awash with colour as Irithen leads me through the grounds to the largest pavilion. As we pass, warriors take note of his white turban and bow, punching fists to their chests. One goes even further, dropping to one knee. The red veil of a drill master is loose around his throat.
First warrior, news spread quickly of your rise. It is good to see you in the white turban at last.
Rise, my friend.
Irithen reaches out a hand, and the drill master takes it, allowing himself to be pulled to his feet.
You honour us with your presence,
the drill master says.
The class is ready for your inspection.
He gestures to a line of skinny boys, many of them clad in nothing but tan beedos and wooden sandals. Some of them are breathing hard and sweating. The dust has not yet settled at their feet. They must have assembled in a hurry when the pavilion guards spotted Irithen's approach.
That is not necessary, Chika.
Irithen gives the boys a dismissive wave of his hand.
I am only here to deliver Prince Olive into your hands.
The Pushting Prince,
Chika laughs.
His mother is a Greenland Heiser. Send him back to the Half-Bloods.
Some of the boys snicker, and I feel my flesh crawl. What is he delivering me to? What is my life about to become? Irithen isn't laughing. His face darkens, and the drillmaster takes immediate note.
Tst!
The hiss is enough to silence the boys. Some look at the drillmaster with open fear, others with respect, but none dare question him.
Olive is the son of Arman Jardir, Chika, and he is my brother.
Irithen's words are quiet, but weighted with menace.
Can the other pavilions train him as well as yours?
Chikga swallows any retort, taking a step back and punching a fist to his chest.
Of course not, Sharumkar. In Evra, it will be done.
Irithen turns to look at me. He doesn't shout, but he raises his voice enough that even the students can hear.
Do not expect any special treatment beyond that, brother. Life in the Greenlands has no doubt made you soft. The coming days will be difficult, but they will harden you.
He steps close, lowering his voice so only I can hear.
And if you wish to see your sister again next waning,
you had best obey the drill master's every command. With that, he turns and walks off. Already an entourage of Kai Sharum and drillmasters is waiting, doubtless to congratulate him on being raised to first warrior and escort him to his new palace.
Quit staring, boy.
Drillmaster Chika slaps the back of my head. With my hair shorn away,
The blow sounds with a sharp crack. Strip down and join the others in line.
Strip? I immediately regret the question as the drill master scowls.
Bedos and sandals only, Nisha Room.
He sneers.
Boys must earn their robes.
I grit my teeth as the other students snigger, but the sounds choke off as I turn my back and pull off my shirt, revealing the lines Iravan's whip left across my back, crusted with blood and Belina's healing paste. Even Chikka blows out a breath at the sight.
Tougher than you look. I'll give you that.
I am thankful the sight keeps their attention from my front. For now, my chest remains as flat as the other boys, but even Mother could only guess if it would remain that way, or if I would soon be lacing myself into a bodice like her and Grandmum. What will happen if my breasts start to show before I am allowed to wear more than just a bido?
What's this?
The drill master slaps the armlet around my biceps.
It's a pretty bauble. My daughter has one just like it, but we wear no trinkets here.
More laughter from the other boys, but I pay it no mind. Chikka is the power here. It was put there by Ni Damajiting Belina to ensure my obedience. If you can break her wardings and remove it, I would be most grateful. The drill master's dark skin pales a little at the name, and he shakes his head.
I am not fool enough to interfere with Damajiting's scheming. Keep your pretty jewelry.
I step into the line and see the boys smirking. I like it. One of them nods at the armlet. Makes you look like a princess. I clench my fist and anger makes me forget my fear. The Damaji may have Sharum to enforce his will, but I'll be coarse-borned before I let some skinny boy bully me. Breaking his nose would clear away that sneer. If I was half myself, I'd do it. But I am barely a shadow, every muscle still sore and weak. I'm lucky to be on my feet at all. I'm not ready to pick a fight. I breathe deeply and let my fingers uncurl. The other students burst out laughing, and even Chikka joins in the mirth. He laughs as he walks up to the boy who spoke.
Well done, Divan. You've just volunteered to teach Princess Olive the basics of the charage. If I find her uninformed, the punishment will be shared by you both.
Thivan's mirth vanishes as the other boys keep chortling. He glares at me as if it's my fault he's a calling's ass.
Fall out!
Chikka barks. This is where we sleep. Thivan's voice is cold as he gestures to a large room with a stone floor. There are no beds, no furnishings at all, just a few dusty blankets, far fewer than there are students. A chill of fear runs through me. The thought of sleeping on a stone floor with the other boys, cold and uncovered, frightens me more than Iravan's whip. But I say nothing. What could I say? It is not as if I could convince the van to conjure me a bed from thin air, or expect sympathy from a boy who seems to resent my very existence. The van is shorter than me, and perhaps a year or two younger. He is thin as a reed, just wiry muscle, skin and bone. His head is shaved smooth, whereas mine still has jagged patches of hair clinging to it. It's worse than being naked in some ways, to look so ragged, even compared with the other boys. Like all the full-blood Nisha Room, Thivan's skin is darker than mine. In Hollow, my skin marked me as an outsider. Even though my rank and privilege forced others to accept me, I was often jealous of Selen and the other girls who could so effortlessly belong. I used to dream of visiting Krasia and experiencing what it was like to be among others who looked like me. But it is not to be. Here, I stand out for my lightness, and lack rank or privilege to armor me. I wish Iravan had put me in the half-blood charage, though it is doubtless just as dismal.
Perhaps there I might fit in. Gruel is served twice a day. After morning Sharisark and at sunset, Thivan says. There's never enough, so those at the end of the line go hungry. If you are wise, you will not let that happen. Even a single missed meal can weaken you enough for others to take advantage. I realize I must have missed supper, though gruel hardly sounds appetizing. My stomach aches, but I ignore it. Admitting to hunger will be a sign of weakness. What happens to the ones who don't eat? Thivan looks at me as he would an idiot. When Nisha Room drops from hunger, they are cast out as kafit. After that, who cares? Begging in the street for scraps, if they're lucky. Princess Olive cares, because she will be joining them soon. A sly voice says behind me. I turn to see a group of smirking Nisha Room, led by a boy perhaps a year or two older than me. Unlike the others, thin and stringy, this one is muscled and broad-shouldered, moving with an easy grace. His shaved head gleams like dark polished wood, and his square jaw makes him look older than his fellows, handsome and ready to leave the Shiraj a man. The Nika, Thivan advises. The term translates first of nothing, an honorific for the leader of a class of Nisha Room. My father was Nika in his day. It means this boy stands at the front of the food lines and is likely the most dangerous fighter here. The Nika moves in close, looking me up and down, lip curled in exaggerated disgust. The Pushting Prince raised a woman. Tell me, did they teach you pillow dancing and how to paint your face? The other boys hoot and howl. Some pretend to lunge forward in hope of making me flinch. I can tell the feints by the set of their feet and don't react. They won't attack without approval from the Nika. Night. Is this what passes for banter in the desert? It makes Oscar seem witty by comparison. Ignoring the others, I return the Nika's appraisal with an unimpressed look of my own. We don't pillow dance in the north, but I can paint your face, if you wish. It might make you less ugly. Ugly is a fine trait in a Sharum, the Nika says. You, on the other hand, are too pretty to be a boy. We'll have to do something about that. And who are you, I ask, to worry so over my looks? I am Chadan, Asu Marok, Asu Aleveran, the boy says proudly. Nika of the full-blood Sharaj. My face goes cold. The Damaji's grandson, the one Belinda kidnapped me to marry. To think, grandfather wanted me to have you as my Jiwa Ka. Chadan laughs, and the boys around him all join in. A pathetic Pushting in silk veils. He spits on the floor at my feet. In Sharaj, fight, Mika said. The first day, fight. The advice frightened me, but Chadan is making it easy. Ha! I channel Grandmum Ilona's derisive bark. As if there was any hope some backwoods princeling from a tribe of cowards was good enough for the Princess of Hollow. Your grandfather needed to kidnap me for you to even have a chance. He snarls, and I see the blow before it comes. His fist strikes the place my face had been a second before, but I've already slid to the side, catching the arm before he can retract it. I use his own energy against him, pulling Chadan off balance and throwing him across the floor. He lands hard on his stomach, breath woofing from his lungs, and I hope I haven't hurt him too badly. They'll never let me see my sister again if I cripple the Damaji's grandson. Chadan's entourage gapes for a moment, but then their fists ball and one gives a shout, lunging for me. I set my feet, ready to meet him head on. I may not be able to take them all,
but I can teach them I am not some...
Wait! Chardin pushes himself up, kicking his feet from under him.
He's mine. I turn to face him, careful not to put my back to the others.
I don't want to hurt you.
There is blood on his teeth as Chardin smiles.
It's too late for that, you green blood rat, because I am most certainly going to hurt you.
He stalks in, hands at the ready, and I am careful not to underestimate him. The Maja are famed for their Charusac, and no doubt the grandson of their leader has been training harder and longer than I. But even without magic, I'm stronger than I look, and trained by two legendary warriors. I manage to parry or sidestep Jadan's blows, but his defenses are in place, and my return strikes are similarly evaded, keeping me from bringing my full strength to bear. No matter, he will tire before me, and with my strength, I only need to land a single blow to turn the battle. Pain lances across my back as I move and strike. I can feel the wounds reopening, seeping blood, but it's more irritant than inhibitor. We circle for a few more moments, and then I see an opening, when Chardin blocks a blow he could have evaded. His blocking arm snaps out for a quick return blow, and I sidestep, reaching for it. But this time, Chardin isn't where I expect. I catch only air as he grabs my wrist and twists, pulling my arm straight and locking the elbow joint. The limb screams with pain as he follows through, using the power of my own attack against me. I have no choice but to assist his throw, leaping in the direction he pulls to prevent the built-up energy from breaking my arm. I hit the stone floor hard. The breath is knocked from me. But I remember Mika's lesson and do not linger, rolling quickly back to my feet. We're even, green blood. Chardin allows me to collect myself, but I can see in his eyes the fight isn't over. Let us see what hollow men are made of. With that, he comes back in, and his blows seem to have tripled in speed. I catch the first two, but the third hits me square in the mouth, and I taste blood as my head rocks back. Before I can recover, he lands two more jolting blows to my body, then hooks one of my flailing arms into another throw, slamming me painfully to the stone once again. Chardin could have put me in a submission hold and ended the fight, but it's clear he wants this to last. I see now that I was lucky with that first throw, catching him by surprise. He has my measure now, and we both know I am not his equal. He fights with the grace of a cleric and the ferocity of a warrior. Again he comes at me, and I keep my guard in close, refusing to offer any energy he can turn against me or limbs to force into submission. I stay on my toes, hoping to evade with minimal contact until he begins to tire. I slip his first punch, rolling under the second. I step back from the third and realize my mistake too late as he spins like a dancer, kicking me in the face. The sound is deafening, and I feel like I was hit by a club. I reel backward, struggling to think, unable to keep my balance. Again, Chardin does not immediately pursue, allowing me time to recover when he could have forced a submission and finished the fight. I shake my head, trying to clear my vision and the ringing in my ears. My back feels like a roaring fire, and every one of Chardin's previous blows throbs with pain. I realize how precise the blows were, each striking a convergence point that leaves my joints weak and my muscles feeling like gelatin. Mika's precise strike school of Charusac targets places in the body where convergences of energy are focused, but it seems the Maja have their own version. War is deception, Mika said. Hide your strength and bide your time. I give in to the pain and weakness, letting my guard slouch just a little. I gasp for air, groaning my pain, then grit my teeth and roar like a demon, springing forward. Chardin takes the invitation to grapple, just as I'd hoped. I can't beat him in an open fight, but in a grapple, muscle against muscle, I have an advantage greater than skill.
He gets behind me as we strike the floor, snatching my right arm to twist into submission. I contort, making sure his back is flat on the floor. Just before my elbow locks, I flex with all my strength, halting his momentum and reversing the pull. Before he can let go, I yank him up and see his eyes widen with disbelief just before I hook my left fist into his chest with everything I have. Chidan slams hard into the floor, his shaved head cracking against the stone with a sound that echoes through the chamber. It is so violent I recoil, afraid I've killed him. It's a relief when his eyes open and he quickly rolls back to his feet. Another mistake. Chidan might have settled for humiliating me before, but now his eyes have the primal fury of the demons that attacked the Barator. I don't think he'll hesitate to kill, as I did. We come together for another pass, and this time Chidan knows better than to grapple. He takes his time, hitting me again and again, each blow targeted for maximum pain and disorientation. I lose track of how many times he hits me, jolted by every blow. Eventually, he tires of the game. A push kick drives me into the crowd of jeering Nisha Rum. Give the Pushting Prince a proper welcome. Never stop fighting. I flatten the nose of the first boy who comes at me, but there are too many, all rushing in at once with kicks and punches. I black an eye here and punch a stomach there, but there is little I can do to stop the blows. Before long, I curl up in a fetal position, trying to protect my head as the onslaught continues. Enough, Chidan says, and immediately the others cease their attack, leaving me a weeping, shuddering ball as they go to claim spaces on the floor to sleep.